Maine, locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Sangamon Auditorium, UIS Springfield, presenting The On Trio on Friday, March 4th at 8 p.m. The On Trio is a classical music ensemble composed of three sisters, a cellist, pianist, and violinist, all graduates of the Juilliard School of Music. Ticket information is available at 800-207-6960.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the first part of the show today, we'll be talking a little bit about thinking about our relationship with animals, non-human animals, and asking the question, are there ways in which having that relationship benefits us? Particularly here, we're talking about children. And a question that a lot of people have considered is this. If you give children the opportunity to get to know animals and to learn about them, to form bonds with them, to understand what it is to care for them, do you help them to grow up to be more caring adults? And there seems to be pretty good reason to believe the answer to that question is yes, and that in fact is just one of the many benefits that human beings have or derive from having relationships with companion animals, particularly the ones that are most common in our lives, dogs and cats, the kind of things that it is actually possible to live with under the same roof. Our guest for the program this morning, this hour of Focus, is Dr. Bill Samuels. He is the Director of Humane Education with the ASPCA. That's the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And he'll be a featured speaker for the annual Humane Education Seminar for the Department of Animal Sciences here at University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. The next seminar will be held 1 week from tomorrow, March 5th. So he'll be here in Champaign-Urbana for that. He's joining us this morning by telephone and would be very happy to entertain your questions and comments. Let me tell you just a little bit more about him. He earned his doctorate in experimental psychology at University of Texas at Arlington for his research on the resilience of college-level students. So no animals were harmed in doing this research. His master's degree involved research on animal cognition and emotion. In addition to having taught math, science, and English to high school kids, he's also designed and taught undergraduate courses on motivation and emotion, experimental design, and general psychology. Questions are welcome here on the program. The number in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Any point here, if you have questions, comments, you can call us. Dr. Samuels, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, thank you. Well, thank you very much for having me on your show.
Sure, well, we appreciate you giving us the time. Let's go to the central question. Well, maybe I should even back off first before asking about kids. And for anybody who is really not quite sure what humane education is, what it is we mean by that, give us a definition.
That's a good question. It's funny, it's been around for quite a long time, but it, by that name, hasn't been known by the general public. At its most basic, it's about caring for the animals in our homes and our community. It is related to character education in that we try to foster kindness, respect, empathy, and goodwill to animals, and like you said earlier, to the human animals as well. We do this mostly through interactions with companion animals and pets, like you said earlier as well. But we also want to engender sort of a general sense of caring and responsibility for the animals all around us and the world that we all live in.
Hmm. Do we have more than anecdotal evidence to suggest that having a little humane education, having that experience with a companion animal, it does indeed help children to grow up to be caring adults and not just adults who care about animals, but who care about other people?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. Yes, we do. The research that is being done on humane education is fairly recent, as really is a lot of the research on the effectiveness of education in general. It's one of the things that has been around for a long time, of course, like education, and has been studied, like you said, anecdotally and qualitatively, but quantitatively, it's been fairly recent. Most of the work has been done by a professor, Frank Ascione, who did a lot of the work in the early 90s showing that children, mostly fourth and fifth graders who were in education programs, in this case using a sort of weekly reader type of newspaper called Kind News, which is produced by NAHE, National Association for Humane and Environmental Education. The children that had a year-long exposure to humane education had better attitudes towards animals, as you'd expect, but also a year later had more empathy, continued to have more empathy towards their peers and other people. We haven't been doing the research long enough to see if this carries on into adulthood, in humane education itself. But there's been other research on empathy and compassion in children, and there's very little doubt that the formative years for empathy for people in general are the earliest ones. Of course, like everything else, it is affected by things later on, but the lion's share of what makes us who we are as far as caring people is developed in our early years.
Mm. Well, certainly there's one of the things that we know, if we look at people who have been violent or abusive to other humans, is that if you dig deep into that person's history, or you look at the other things that are going around on that person's life, often you see some kind of animal abuse going on there, and that in fact, as an assessment tool, can be kind of a red flag for you.
Yeah, really. It's looking at the good side of it. Teaching humane education can help engender empathy and nurture our children, ourselves, really, to become nicer people. Looking at the dark side of it. Mm. Yes. A researcher, Stephanie Verlinden, found that over half of the kids who went on shooting sprees in schools, of all wonderful topics, over half of them had histories of significant abuse to animals. And that is true of most of the most gruesome of the people in society, serial killers, like Son of Sam, the likes of that. A little more down to earth, I guess you could say, abuse and cruelty to animals is one of the indicators of conduct disorders in kids, which is, it's acting bad, but it's consistently acting bad and getting worse and worse at it. Conduct disorder often turns into antisocial personality disorder as adults, and that is as you'd imagine, not someone who isn't good with society in pretty severe ways. Cynical, contemptuous of other people's feelings, apathetic, enjoying other people's suffering. And some of the early warning signs of that sort of personality is a disregard for animals.
I'm sure that your organization tracks cases of animal cruelty. I am curious, can you say anything about trends? Is this something where we see more or less the same than we did 10, 30, 40 years ago?
Huh. Well, the short answer is no. But, okay, as a society, our attitudes towards animals have really changed a lot pretty recently. I mean, I remember, like, when I was a kid watching the Flintstones, and in the beginning scrolling of the song and everything, one of the last things that Fred does is he takes his saber-toothed cat and throws it outside for the night. And you know, cats being outdoors, you know, in some cases, you know, that's what people do, of course. But we know that just since my childhood, which wasn't that long ago, we've been changing our attitudes towards animals and treating them better as more of a member of the family. But that's not to say that animals haven't millennia been parts of our family, but we understand them better and are looking at them differently. One of the reasons we're looking at them differently is because we do understand the benefits they give us on a deeper and more scientific level. As far as, like, changes in trends, though, I don't know. We have more people reporting incidences now, so we understand more what is going on. But we really haven't been looking at the data long enough, again, to be able to see if people are becoming more humane in that sense. But anecdotally, I'd say, yeah.
How about if you looked at how many places have laws that criminalize animal cruelty and their willingness to actually enforce those laws? Do you see anything happening there?
Yes. There are more and more laws on the books in many different ways. Looking at animal cruelty more seriously, more as a crime, first of all, and also as a more serious crime. In several states, it has gone from misdemeanor to a felony. And also, human education itself is something that people are realizing is a very effective way of reaching children, not only just to teach them kindness, and just, you know, how do you treat an animal, showing them how to guide their kindness correctly, but also as a way of teaching in general. Hmm. Animals are very much on kids' radar. Kids love animals, as do probably all people in general. And so teachers are realizing more and more that using animals and talking about animals and nature and our relationship with them is a great way of teaching social studies, language arts, science, things like that. Hmm. So, yes, it is more and more on the books, and it is being taken more seriously by legislators, and judges are sentencing more seriously as well.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Bill Samuels. He is Director of Humane Education at the ASPCA, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And he will be here 1 week from tomorrow on the U of I campus. He'll be one of the speakers at the annual Humane Education Seminar for the Department of Animal Sciences at UIUC. So if you're interested in that, you can go to their website and find out more about him. Questions, of course, here are welcome to 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I think probably if you watch really small children, the ones who are getting to the point where they're big enough to kind of get around and grab stuff, if you see how they interact with animals, you can see that maybe they're not, don't always draw a clear distinction between stuffed animals and real animals. and that's something that the real animals, you know, try to get that message across that says, no, wait a minute, I'm not a stuffed animal. Don't grab me like that. But if you're lucky, they're, you know, everybody's pretty patient and they get that worked out. What, though, do you, when you start to do humane education with maybe a little bit older children, what exactly do you do, and in what ways do you work with them and talk with them to get across the idea that, well, this other thing is in fact a thinking, feeling creature, kind of like you, and they do have some of the same experiences of the world, and you do want to treat them like you would like to be treated?
Yeah. I look at there being two main things that we want to, well, I guess maybe three main things we want to convey with humane education in general, and just with education a lot, I think, more the education of a person as opposed to just the imparting of information. You know, first, what we want to do is teach kids, animals need food, water, shelter, love, care, just like the rest of us, and helping nurturing empathy that way. So the first thing is just information, just how do you take care of the animals. They need exercise, things like that. In addition to that, the empathy, helping understand that these are caring beings that have feelings very similar to our own. And the third one, I think, which is important, which isn't always done, especially with little kids, is teach them how to do it. All of us have a strong need for competence. We need to be effective. We all do. In fact, if you think about the things you like, besides, ice cream and your mom, it's things usually you're good at. And it's strange. I mean, I end up liking statistics. Who'd ever think of like statistics? What a boring, clutchy thing is that, you know? Remember my first class, like, oh, this is horrible. But now I enjoy it. I sit down to do an analysis, and I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. The reason is I've come to be good at it. And so with kids, if we can teach them skills to be taking care of animals, be responsible for the animals in their lives, they will be glad for that. They'll not only be able to show that they are able to care for something else that has feelings, and who doesn't want to do that? Mm. But they'll also feel good about themselves, that they can do something. And it is very important, again, especially for young kids, to be fostering this sense of ability. It is something which really can generalize beyond just the relationship with their pets into relationships with other people. I can help my friends. I am a capable person, able to intervene if you're crying, help you if you fall off the swing, and also to themselves that I am a capable person. And you can do it without animals. But again, one reason to use animals in this sense with kids is because kids really do respond to them. They love animals. You look around at anything directed to kids, from breakfast cereal to cartoons to anything. And it's not long before you see an animal popping out or very prominent in it, or maybe some robot-animal hybrid, but still it's an animal because kids love animals. And they should. They're cute and doesn't like them.
Let me ask you another question, and I'm sorry, this is going to sound kind of confrontational, but I expect that in the back of people's minds, they might have this suspicion that humane education, the homeless business we've been talking about, is kind of a stalking horse for an animal rights agenda, and that what people like you really would like to do ultimately is to encourage people not to eat animals, maybe, and not to use them in research, and there are some people, and I know that you have a companion, you live with cats, so
yes.
you may be not in this category, but there are people, in fact, who believe that we shouldn't even have companion animals, that somehow that is wrong. How do you confront someone who says, oh, I know what you guys are up to? What you really want is all these other things.
Well, that we don't do that. This is the ASPCA. We are an animal welfare organization and pretty much a centrist organization. We do not throw paint on people's fur coats or do raids We try to go about it trying to really just help people understand the animals in their lives. And it's not to try to have any kind of hidden agenda. I think it would be very bad for our goals in general, whatever they may be, to be dishonest. And what we do with kids is very straightforward. We are simply trying to teach them respect, empathy, caring. We are using animals in doing that. But the decisions they make about the relationship with animals are theirs. Mm-hmm. We stress critical thinking and objectivity in all the work we do, and especially with kids. We do not go anywhere uninvited, and when we go there, we are very respectful of the views and cultural backgrounds of the people that are there. In general, it would be just ineffective to be trying to brainwash or alter people's views anyway, even if philosophically that wasn't just totally against what I believe in. You don't try to help somebody by trying to change fundamentally who they are. So, no, we don't at all try to get people to change their eating habits or things like that. We're interested in trying to make the lives of animals more kind, more safe and healthy. And one way to do that is just to make sure that they have a nice home to live in. That the animals that people bring into their lives are hopefully adopted from shelters, for example. That the ones that come into their lives are treated kindly and with the care they need. But that people aren't trying to change their lives like that. For example, we have a certified humane seal for meat that is for the animals that are raised as well as they can be, like free-range chickens, for example, that we are treating them well when we're getting something back from them.
Well,
did that answer your question?
Yes, indeed. Other questions are welcome. I just want to point out to people who are listening that if you want to make a comment, ask a question, you can certainly do that. Here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455 is the number to call. We do also have a toll-free line. That means that if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number. And as long as you're within the sound of my voice on the air or in the United States, you could be listening on the Internet. You could use the toll-free line, too. That's 800-222-9455. We have talked to hear a little bit about the benefits of humane education and children. So this idea that somehow having contact with animals is good for kids, also that there are some important messages that we want them to have about how they should treat animals and have respect for them and want to see that they get proper care and that they have a good life. So that we've been kind of focusing here in the conversation on children. But it's also interesting, some of the research that has been done about what sort of benefits can accrue to humans to have non-human animals in their lives. And mostly here we're talking about the common companion animals. There seems to be some growing body of evidence that shows that for us, there are concrete sort of benefits. There are psychological benefits. There are physiological benefits of having animals in our lives as adults.
As adults, yeah, there sure are. Well, there's been a lot of research coming out of, for example, the Mayo Clinic, of all places. People who have pets, most particularly dogs in this case, have a lot of medical or physical benefits, I should say. For example, those who survive heart attacks are more likely to be alive a year later if they have a companion animal, dog most particularly, in their home. They lower blood pressure. They are good for getting rid of stress. They do increase one's sense of mood and well-being. People who have pets tend to be less depressed. Depression, as we know, is essentially the common cold of mental illnesses. It is very common, and the animals in our lives can help us with that. With kids, pets are often a respite from a chaotic world. The children will report that if they have a problem, they will go to their pets. More often, they'll go to their parents. They're more likely to share secrets with their pets. Just because pets, well, maybe because they can't, you know, tell the secrets, but also because they are there. They are consistent in situations that can be very inconsistent, just as lives can be hectic. They give unconditional love, of course, and kids know this and respond to this. One of the things that children really do need in their lives is stability, a sense of structure and consistency. They need to be able to rely on that so that they can then go forth and explore. They have to have one hand holding onto something when the other hand is stretching forward and exploring. And the other hand could be holding a leash or maybe petting a cat. They can really be a source of comfort and security for kids, as well as helping teach them what to give and to take in a relationship. Pets are very honest, and while they can be very loyal and caring, they will let us know if we are able to look and read their feelings, what they're thinking. And kids understand that. So it is one way that they can be learning empathy by having to look and see what the animal is saying to them. And, of course, the body language is a good thing for all of us to learn. Yeah. But for us as adults, there are many physical benefits, psychological as well.
That's something that I'm really fascinated by, the idea that for an adult, having a companion animal could have that kind of positive benefit. It could be could help your outlook. It could be it could help reduce your stress. It could even sitting there with the animal and talking to them and petting them and interacting with them could actually lower your blood pressure. I think I found that a fascinating idea, and I guess, you know, to me the question right away is why? Why should that be the case? And I don't expect that we really have an answer. Although I expect also it's something that researchers and various people have thought about.
It's In some ways we don't know. In some ways we don't know. In some ways we know in our minds, in the studies we do, and in some ways we know in our hearts. The ways we know scientifically, well, people with animals are more active. If you have a dog, well, the old saying, if your dog is overweight, you need exercise. Dogs do help us walk, walking being one of the greatest forms of exercise. Animals in general keep us active. They are just something in our lives which is both unexpected and exciting. One of my cats, Thorndike, named after E.L. Thorndike, the psychologist. He's only 5 months old. My other cat is about 9 years old now. But Thorndike, coming out of kittenhood, is still just complete unpredictability. He spends most of his waking hours in midair, between two things. And he's great. And it's just something which enriches and excites your life. And also a very loving and wonderful way. It's not an exciting thing like, gee, my car ran out of oil. It's an exciting thing, well, gee, my toilet paper's all on the floor. Especially for people that as many of us have, our other loved ones not right next door to us, they are someone, something to come home to and to be happy to see us. They keep us active. They give us support. And it's not only kids that share their secrets with pets, but also just simply petting an animal. The fact of holding this warm being, this caring thing against us, and stroking it and coddling it is a very enduring, very fulfilling moment for people. The petting lowers the blood pressure, our heart rate as well. There's also evidence, this is just in general, that if there's someone or some animal getting care and someone else giving care, that the benefits are maybe not really one-sided, but more for one of those people. That in a relationship which someone is getting care, someone else is giving care, one of those people is getting more out of that relationship. And you know which one it is, David?
The human being?
The one giving care.
Oh, yes.
You're absolutely right. The one giving care sometimes gets more out of the relationship than the one getting it. And animals do require our care, and we enjoy that. We like being relied on. We like giving. And we like knowing that we are people who do give. We like knowing that we are giving people. And it's one way of affirming in ourselves that we are loving, caring people, as well as the benefits for the animals, too, of course.
We have a caller here we'd like to talk with, and perhaps also I should again introduce our guest. We're speaking with Dr. Bill Samuels. He is the Director of Humane Education for the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. He has a doctorate in experimental psychology from University of Texas, Arlington, where he did research on college students. His master's degree involved research on animal cognition and emotion. He will be here in Champaign-Urbana 1 week from tomorrow, on Saturday, March 5th, to be one of the speakers at the annual Humane Education Seminar for the Department of Animal Sciences here at University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. And again, if you're interested in finding out about that, you can go to the website of Animal Sciences, www.ansci.uiuc.edu, and I'm sure that you can find out all about it. Questions here are welcome, too. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We do have a caller in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. This is a comment more than a question or anything. I think the greatest thing on the give and take with the animals is that the animals are non-judgmental. They don't ever tell us, oh, go away, shut up, get out of my life, that sort of thing. That's my comment, and I'll hang up.
All right, thank you. Well, that's certainly true.
Yes, it's very true. I'm glad the caller brought that up. That is a really great point. Doesn't matter what our hair looks like, if we have horrible breath and haven't taken a shower for a couple weeks, look on the point, I guess. But yes, they love us no matter what. And the reason is because they love us for who we really are. They aren't worried about what the current fashion is, about, you know, how things, you know, if we, you know, say something stupidly, they look at us, they look into our eyes, and they just really do care for who we are in our relationship, just in general with them. Yes. Mm. They don't judge us because they love us.
Yeah. Well, that is fairly remarkable that you could have that kind of relationship. Obviously, if an animal has been abused, they seemingly, and for good reason, will not trust other human beings. I mean, if someone has been cruel to them, you're going to have to prove that you're different. But sort of aside from that, that it is remarkable that other, you know, things that in our interactions with other human beings, you know, bother us, get on our nerves, we do that kind of thing. That the dogs and the cats, they just don't do that.
Yes, you're absolutely right, David. And I'm not sure how to say this. It's the animals who are abused. It's horrible. It really, because they are so loving, because they really do just trust and want to love us. It's amazing the ones that are abused, that can't overcome that abuse and come back to trust again. It really is inspiring that they are able to forgive us as a species for what a few of us do. Animals in the shelter, most of them are not relinquished for abuse, unfortunately, I guess. Mm-hmm. But even the ones that have a bad history, they are able to come back, and with proper love and training and gain the stability again, can turn around and love us again. Yeah. And I think that it's also a wonderful inspiration that animals can have for us.
And that gets at something, and maybe it's sort of a side issue, but when you think about animals that are in shelters and you ask the question, mm-hmm. why, dogs particularly, I'm not sure that this is quite as much an issue for cats, but and animals, I suppose any kind of animal that has that a human being has identified as having a behavior problem that makes them difficult to live with, you really have to go back to the training issue. And I think that probably in most cases, that's what it is. It's poor training or lack of training that's the issue. And in many cases, animals are only doing what they're naturally inclined to do. They come with a natural program, and if it doesn't fit into the way that we live, then that's a training issue, and it's not their fault.
Are you knowledgeable on all issues? You're absolutely right. Yes. The main reason why dogs in particular are surrendered to shelters is because of behavioral problems. And the main reason for the behavior problem is, yeah, you're right, dogs are being dogs. Mm-hmm. And the main reason really is animals are not typically surrendered by evil, horrible people. It's people that really just don't know. They just don't quite understand. And again, that's one of the things human education tries to do, is to teach people what animals need. That, you know, this is a dog, this is what dogs do, this is what they need. Before you adopt, what do you need to keep in mind? Do you want to adopt a puppy or an adult dog? Puppies are wonderful, great, just you could not laugh. You would be laughing every day. But you would also be cleaning up after them until they learn, like kids who wear diapers, to control themselves. So puppies take a lot of work that people don't think about necessarily before they adopt a puppy, as opposed to an adult dog, which probably has had a lot of training. A lot of shelters, when animals are surrendered to them, are able to give them additional behavioral training, so that any picadillos the dog had going into the shelter, they're able to take care of. And mind you, that a lot of the people that surrender dogs just don't know that this is a dog that I can't be going away for 10 hours a day and expect my dog to be turned off like a light bulb. Mm-hmm. It's still going to need to play. It's still going to need to go outside. It's still going to need attention in the time in its life.
And that's something that I suppose is probably, and maybe this goes without saying, but I think is probably another important point, particularly about dogs, is that they're intensely social animals. And they, for their health and well-being, they need to have a lot of contact with their people. And again, if you want to have a companion animal and they're going to be alone for a long time, well, you better think about a cat. They can deal with that. Although, of course, they also want to have the contact with their people. But they're a little bit more forgiving about being left alone.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In all the ways that you said, it's in one sense, like the caller said, animals are very non-judgmental. They do accept us for who we are. And they give us what they think we need, especially dogs really do try to give us what they want to do, what they want to give us. And in a sense, it's incumbent on us really to hold up our end of the relationship, to hold up our end of the leash in a sense, and to understand them as they try to understand us and care for their needs as well. Cats also. I for one think that cats are given a short shrift. They are very forgiving in the relationship, but they also are very responsive. I'm sure you with Frisbee and others will understand that cats do respond to us as well.
Sure.
That when we give to them, they understand. And will give back to us in the way they understand. If a cat is allowed to go outside, for example, they'll come and give us gifts every once in a while. You know, treating us like they feel we want to be treated, just like a child will. If a child sees his or her mom crying or dad crying, the kid might bring his or her favorite toy, thinking, "Well, that is what you need to be taken care of." Animals, cats and dogs, and others as well, will do that for us. But you're right, cats are more forgiving of us in staying away. But you're absolutely right. They need attention, too.
Oh, sure.
And the more attention you give cats, the more attention they will respond to it.
All right. Well, let's talk with somebody else. Here's a caller in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping Dr. Samuels could talk a little bit about what communities can be doing if we feel that humane education is important. Who are going to be the people providing programs? What kind of programs should we have? And I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay.
Great question. Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, I think that the tack of the question is right on the mark. That just like I think it's Hillary Clinton, I remember, said, you know, it takes a village to raise a kid. It takes a community to really help itself, and all of those that are in it, and the animals are part of our community. They really do give us a lot in our families, and it is good for us to be working with them in a community environment. Some of the ways that a community in general can be helping is to be working with their Humane Society, SPCA, Animal Shelter, to work with them in their efforts to be helping the animals that are in the community. For example, the strays and animals that are unfortunately abandoned just their own devices in the streets, to be taking care of them. For example, with cats, I don't want to say the best, really the only that we know of effective way of controlling for a feral cat population is called trap, neuter, return, in which, to the best of one's devices, all of the cats in an area, and they do tend to live in sort of communities themselves, so it is possible to, with some work, get all of the cats in an area. You trap them, you catch them, and of course, humane traps. And then they're vaccinated and sterilized, altered, spayed, or neutered, and then released. Why would you do that? Well, because until we get rid of every single feral animal, every single feral cat or dog, they're going to be filling the niches that are there. So if we are able to sterilize the animals that are out there, we're able to slowly control the population, take care of the ones that are out there, and then since they're not able to reproduce, then we're able to you know, control the population and hopefully eventually get rid of it. Other ways, working with schools, and while human education has been traditionally done in the classroom, a lot of local, as I said, SPCAs or humane societies or other organizations, there is one called the Care Center in Urbana-Champaign that is working in the community in general, that is not self-affiliated with a shelter. But anyway, these humane educators typically go into classrooms, traditionally go into classrooms, and talk to kids. More and more, we as humane educators are learning that while that is effective, there probably are more effective ways by working with kids in the community, in after-school organizations like Kiwanis, Rotary Clubs, things like that, like Girls and Boy Scouts, where they can be doing community service, what is now called service learning, for whatever term it is. These kids are learning important life skills, leadership skills, how to apply the knowledge they're learning in the classrooms, being able to work in teams, long-term on projects. See, what do they sound like? These sound like things you do at work, right? Well, the kids can learn to do these things by working in the community and helping the shelter, animals and you know, that are unfortunately don't have homes, working with their families and others with the animals that do have homes to teach people how to take care of them as well. I hope that answers the question. It's really a talk that you could that would almost not end. And I hope to be able to touch on some of those topics actually in my talk at the Rich and Diverse Audiences seminar at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Saturday, March 5th, like you said. As well as some of the other talks that'll be given there, which I think are really great. And there are a couple seats, I understand, left at the conference. We're also, I'm happy to say, going to be webcasting the conference. People from all across the country and the world can be joining in the conference through the internet and that. But that turned out to be too good an idea, and all of the webinar seats are full, but there are a couple, I understand, left for the actual conference, which is better. You get to see all our bright, shiny faces and talk to people in person and you know, interact that way as well.
Okay. We have another caller here we'll get to in just a moment. I do want to, however, introduce again our guest. For anyone who might have tuned in last 5 or 10 minutes, we're talking with Dr. Bill Samuels. He is the Director of Humane Education for the ASPCA, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. He is a PhD doctor. He has a doctorate in experimental psychology from the University of Texas at Arlington. He will be here 1 week from tomorrow for the annual Humane Education Seminar for the Department of Animal Sciences here at University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And again, if you're interested in more information, probably the easiest thing to do is go to their website, www.ansci.uiuc.edu, and I expect there the information is right there. Questions, too, are welcome here on the program, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And we do have a caller here ready to go in Southern LaSalle County. This is on our toll-free line, line 4.
Great.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've been to Texas, and like I was telling my friend, my mother and I used to send our money to Arlington, but I didn't know the University of Texas was there, and I hope someday to get there. But my yak here is I have been raising dogs for my own benefit since I was about 35, and that's twice my age now. But I want to give you a couple of humorous things. I love that Animal Planet, not especially the reptiles. But in the morning, I turn on the television without the volume and watch. And I sure hope a few people were watching yesterday morning when whoever was, man or woman, they had like tights on or a toreador outfit, and they were playing a bullfight with their dog. And I don't know what the dog was because they had the volume down, but it was like a little bigger than a Pantheon. But the other thing I want to tell you, which is a true story, not about a dog of mine, but this is years ago, probably 70s or something. I put out food. I can't remember who my dogs were, and it was a regular-sized dish, and it was sloping, and it had all the food in it, and a thoroughbred Irish setter came by, put his tooth into the dish, and carried everything off and away, and I never saw it again. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
That's a great story.
Well, other questions, comments, stories are certainly welcome. We have about 10 minutes left in the program, a little bit less than that. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I'm sort of thinking about the last question that the caller before this one asked about what you do to get humane education going in the community. And I guess my guess would be that the people who do that probably mostly would be people who in some professional capacity deal with animals, and we'd be talking about vets and people who've worked in vet clinics and vet students, probably in a community like this, people who are involved with the shelter. I suppose past that, it could simply be people who are interested generally in the subject of animal welfare and might be affiliated with organizations like ASPCA. They would all be people who one way or another are really involved with animals in their work lives. Is that pretty much who it is that does this kind of activity?
Yes. I just had a vet student in my office yesterday interested in learning more about humane education to be able to use it in her – wherever she goes to be practicing. Veterinarians are a source of information, and I'm very happy to say that more and more they are understanding sort of the preventative medicine that can be given through just the relationships we have with our animals and understanding them better. A lot of things can be prevented by taking care of them on the forefront as well. Shelters, again, are a great source of information. They're often an underutilized resource. People think of them as a place to drop things off, maybe pick up, but in fact they can be a great source of information as well and are usually very happy to be working with people in the community and are themselves very active and sincere members of communities. Other organizations, there are community education organizations, foundations as well. Really, the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign is a great resource for information and classes. It itself and its faculty in general are very knowledgeable. The Animal Science Department, obviously, is very active in human education. And you really sort of a proactive view of our relationship with animals. So I think those are some good places to go. Teachers, like I said earlier, are understanding the many benefits of it, again, for the animals and nature and for the kids to be bringing human education into the classroom. The Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, I don't remember what it is. We right now are working with the Girl Scouts in here in New York City, and they have a pet care patch and a whole set, just they themselves anyway, have a whole set of activities and their projects based around the caring of animals, pets, and also other animals in general. And these are all topics that can be brought up with community organizations like Kiwanis or Rotary, Lions Clubs, KFCs, the likes of that. And we're probably very happy once they understand the benefits of this to be working with these things on their own and helping with them. Mm-hmm. But again, really, there are many benefits for it, both for us psychologically, socially, physiologically, as well as for the animals as well.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that, and it may not necessarily be a recent trend, but it does seem to me that people who deal with animals in academic settings are giving more and more attention to the all of the various dimensions of companion, the relationship between humans and companion animals. And I mean, that's not to say that they haven't before, because places like the University of Illinois and other universities have trained vets for a long time. And there certainly has been, in a place like this, a very important association between agriculture and the university and raising livestock and so forth. But it does seem to me, and it may have something, may say something about the increasing importance of companion animals in people's lives, that aspect is starting to get more and more attention. At least I think more, the human-animal bond, I think, is starting to get more attention than it had in the past.
Yeah. And actually, bringing up the agricultural science in the U of I is great as well, because as you'd mentioned earlier, it's a great testament to our understanding of our relationship with animals. In one sense, that animals that are raised more humanely, more healthfully, and we understand better what health is, just we as the purveyors of a growing body of knowledge understand what health is. That health isn't just, you know, heart rate and body mass index. It is also, it's mind and body and spirit. That health is all related, and the health of our animals are all related. They're mind, body, and spirit, or whatever as well. And to be eating healthy food, if you're going to be eating, say, a steak, if the animal, if he or she was healthy alive, it's healthier for you as well. One reason as well, and more particularly with our relationship with companion animals. It was the blessing we never appreciated that we had this whole time. A lot of the early research on the benefits of companion animals, of pets in our lives, was done accidentally. One of the early works on the benefits of pets for children was done by Boris Levinson, a child psychologist in the late 60s. Who was working with this one particularly intractable child who may have been autistic, we're not really sure, but he'd been working with this child, trying to get this boy to speak, just to say something for a month. Here's a trained child psychologist. If ever anyone at that point had any knowledge of how to reach children, he did, and he wasn't able to for an entire month. And Levinson was in the habit of bringing his dog into his office. But, of course, he would shoo the dog out when a patient was coming. Well, it just so happened that this boy came a little early one day, and Levinson hadn't yet had a chance to shoo his dog out. The boy came in his office with the dog there. The boy went right up to the dog and started talking to him. Mm-hmm. Levinson was like, oh, gee, never thought of that. And there's things like that. It is just doctors, medical doctors, incidentally realizing, you know, our survivors have a lot of pets. it was this dawning of understanding that, gee, you know, something that we kind of in one way knew this whole time. We are now understanding the depth of it, the real extent to which we do rely on animals quite a bit.
Well, we're just about at the point where we're going to have to ramp up for this part of the show. I do want to mention again, for people who are interested, the guest this morning, Bill Samuels, is going to be a featured speaker at the upcoming annual Humane Education Seminar for the Department of Animal Sciences at University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. And that's taking place a week from tomorrow. It's on March 5th. And he says that, as far as he knows, there are still some places there if you're interested in participating. And maybe one of the best ways to find out more information is to go to the website of the Department of Animal Sciences. And that is www.ansci.uiuc.edu. And right on that front page, there is a in the announcement section, there's a link here you can click on for the Humane Education Seminar, and you can find out all about that.
In the past years, the U of UC has really done a great job with this seminar, and I'm really excited to be able to be a part of it this year, speaking at it, because it's a great source of information. And one of the great things about it is really the audience, the people that do go there, and the interactions that the people can have with people that have similar interests but probably very different backgrounds. I mean, the composition of the audience is very diverse and very interesting to talk to.
Right. And our guest this morning, Dr. Bill Samuels, he's the Director of Humane Education for the ASPCA. That's the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. If you're interested in finding out more about them and you have web access, you can go to their website, which is www.aspca.org. Dr. Samuels, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much, David. I really appreciate it.
Our show, Focus 580, made possible in part with support from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Focus 580 also made possible by a grant from Bodywork Associates this year, celebrating their 23rd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. On the next Afternoon Magazine, a glimpse into the world of science of the Victorian age and one of its biggest controversies, the origin of coral reefs. The controversy involved three main characters, Charles Darwin and father and son naturalists Lewis and Alexander Agassiz. In the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine today, Celeste Quinn talks with author David Dobbs, author of a new book that explores this territory. It's titled Reef Madness. That's coming up today on the Afternoon Magazine. Gets underway at noon here on AM 580. We're going to take a break. We'll have more focus after we get some news and an update on the market, so stay tuned.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4600.